Welcome back to episode 6 of Ball Talk with Bun. Haven't had an episode in a while because I've been under the weather a little bit. I'm still a little under the weather, so bear with me. You might hear a little weird voice. But today I'm going to dive into the Sweet 16 game starting tonight and tomorrow. And then looking forward, I'm going to give my March Madness Final Four prediction. I will also dive into the Western Conference and NBA, which is looking very, very close now. 4 through 10 is very close. 1 through 3 is very close. No one knows who's going to play who. I wanted to start with some more NFL news, more NFL free agency news. Of course, we saw Justin Fields trade to the Steelers. We saw all-pro corner Legarius Sneed get traded to the Titans for nothing. We saw Mike Williams sign with the Jets, Tyron Smith signing with the Jets, Morgan Moses signed with the Jets. There was a couple of huge signings that may have went under the radar. I think the Texans getting Danielle Hunter is not being talked about enough. The growth of Will Anderson is inevitable. He had a great rookie year. And I believe with Danielle Hunter on the other side, you have D'Amico Ryans calling the plays for them. We saw what the defense did to Cleveland. We saw how that defense improved throughout the year. And the Texans start getting better and better because of D'Amico. Now you add a veteran pass rusher who is more than proven and is a 14.5, 16 sack guy year with a young stud and Will Anderson. And you have Derek Stingley on the outside. That's a scary, scary future. Now, I say future, not meaning the next 3 to 5 years. I'm talking about immediate future. If the Texans can build something and depending on how their draft looks, this could be a contending team in the AFC. Another team I think had a huge signing was the Jets. I already mentioned that with Tyron Smith. Aaron Rodgers literally lasted 3 plays last year. He did. He lasted 3 plays. You had Morgan Moses. You have Tyron Smith, an all-pro tackle, one of the best tackles ever. Hey, Morgan Moses is the biggest upgrade, but you have Tyron already. I think that's huge. Like I said, Aaron Rodgers literally played like 3-4 snaps. So you have the protection. Now you don't have to address that protection in the draft. You can get younger in the draft. Obviously, you get younger in the draft, but you can get younger at receiver in a draft is what I mean. You have a guy like Malik Nabers who might not even be available at 10 after yesterday with the 40 he ran. His vertical was crazy. I think he ran like a 4.35, 4.36 in unofficial, and then they made official 4.37, 4.38. But his vertical was a 42-inch vertical. And, I really feel like with the way Marvin Harrison Jr. gets hyped, deservedly so, he's kind of overlooked. Malik Nabers, as soon as he touches the ball, he can take it to the house. People talk about, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the greatest prospect since whatever, the best prospect ever, whatever. Deservedly so. He's a freak of nature. But Malik Nabers, I'm telling you guys, I think Malik Nabers might have the scariest and highest ceiling out of all those receivers. I think higher than Marvin Harrison Jr., higher than Rome Odunze, higher than a Brian Thomas, a Brock Bowers, anybody you name it. And I could be wrong. I may sound crazy. I'm a huge Marvin Harrison Jr. fan, but seeing his ability out of the slot on the outside is pretty uncanny. There was like 4 or 5 different instances. I wish I could show you the clip, but there was multiple instances last year, the year before, and then when he was in Nebraska. People forget he transferred to LSU from Nebraska and had a great, and I mean great, season at Nebraska. But as I was saying, the way he operates in the slot and his playmaking ability and how fast he is, how dangerous he is after the catch, he's a fine route runner, a polished route runner. He's a pro. He's a pro, and he's flashy, and he's very athletic, and I think he has the highest ceiling. And I think if somebody were serious about winning, if somebody wanted to get over the hump, whether it be in the AFC or in the NFC, they want to get over that hump and compete with a San Francisco or compete with a Philadelphia, a Detroit, or compete with a Kansas City or a Baltimore, I think a team needs to go up and go get him. Someone needs to go get him because Malik Nabers is not falling to 10. So the Jets The Jets need to go get him. Unless they feel comfortable that a Dunze or Bowers is there, they need to go up and go get Neighbors. He is a game changer. A team who is one piece away needs to make that call. He is special. I also feel the same way about Roma Dunze. I think he's underrated too. He is a game changer as well. Much different, I think, than Malik Neighbors, obviously. He's more of a pro. The release, in and out of breaks, he's just a pro. Late hands, he can win any jump ball like Marvin Harrison Jr. He reminds me of a mix of them, I think. Super athletic, not as dynamic after the catch maybe as a Marvin Harrison Jr. or let alone Malik Neighbors. But super athletic, can catch the ball, polished route runner, he's a dominant threat in the red zone. One-on-one savant. He's a football savant. I don't hear football savant, but when I think of him, I think of a football savant. He is a smooth, professional receiver that also needs to be taken high. And all these teams who are one step or one tier away from contending need to make that call for Rome as well. Now, I want to dive into some of the things that the Ravens and Chiefs have done. You know, they just had a battle in the AFC Championship. Those are the most talked about teams, I feel like. The Chiefs letting go of Legarius Sneed for nothing kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But, I mean, they're the Chiefs. They let go of Tyreek Hill and literally went back-to-back. So, will it matter? It really might not. I love Legarius Sneed. He's great. But this is a business. And, you know, it was either him or Chris Jones. And I think they made the right decision of Chris Jones. Although I would have hoped they got more compensation for Legarius Sneed. They made the right decision to keep it Chris Jones over Sneed. Because both of them want to get paid. One of them was going to get paid, not both of them. And keeping Chris Jones, that's huge, man. That's huge. You kept a needle mover. You lost one, but you kept one. You know? Baltimore, I talked about on a couple pods ago, Derrick Henry. The Derrick Henry signing has some scary potential. That could be very scary, I will admit. However, losing Zietler, losing Morgan Moses, I think that will hurt them, especially a team that wants to run the ball. And, you know, even though they literally didn't run the ball at the AFC Championship, you know, their mantra is running the ball. So bringing in Henry is huge, but losing Zietler and Moses, that's going to hurt. Moses wasn't even the best. Morgan Moses wasn't even the best tackle around, obviously. He struggled. Stanley's a shell of himself. Lamar had pressure in his face every time they played somebody with some defense. He had a lot of pressure in his face. But, that stinks. I think that's going to sting Baltimore. The defense, too. Losing Mike McDonald. I mean, you watched him shut out Pat Mahomes in the second half of the AFC Championship game, and you let him walk. I'm sorry, but I would have paid him the bank. That is the best defense coordinator in the league right now, I think. And you let him go, that's a slap in the face, I think. I think that's a slap in the face to that defense. and to Lamar Jackson. Some of these moves by Harbaugh are extremely, extremely concerning to me. I think they're very concerning. Based off how I saw the season end last year, and based off the departures at key areas, Patrick Queen at linebacker, Zietler at right guard, Morgan Moses at right tackle, I'd be very concerned next year for Baltimore. If they were to somewhat decline or somehow decline, I would not be surprised at all. But like I said, the Derrick Henry signing has scary potential. I mean, he's Derrick Henry, so he and Lamar could be a threat. They could for sure be a threat. Lamar's an MVP. I still have respect for him. I still love him, but, you know, my motto, I got to see it in January from Lamar and from the Ravens. And I just don't know yet. The Sweet 16 games start tonight, and I'm very excited. I believe tonight is the East region and the West region tonight. Alabama, North Carolina play. That's going to be a very good game. I think it could be high scoring. excuse me. Both teams like to push the pace. Both teams can shoot. The difference in this game, though, I think will be North Carolina's improvement on defense. I think the win at Duke they had, I think they have really grown up since then when they went to Duke. I think that was their coming together point of the season. North Carolina had a lot of defensive struggles, and they were really inconsistent. But beating Duke, I think they have been a different team since then. And I would not be surprised if they make a run to the Final Four or to the championship. North Carolina looks really good. And R.J. Davis and Armando Bacot, those seniors, they have been there before. They have been in this tournament before, and they made a run a couple years ago. I have no doubt in my mind that they might make a run again. Alabama is very good, though. They can score the ball. And Mark Sears and Hubert Davis, I'm very excited to see the plays they draw up out of timeouts. I'm excited to see the chess match between them because those are two really good coaches. And I'm so excited for that game. The UConn game against South Dakota, San Diego State University. I'd be surprised if UConn doesn't slap them. You know, the Vegas people have them as a 12-point favorite, 11.5-point favorite. That's a crazy spread for a Sweet 16 game. But that just shows how good UConn is, man. They just repeated. And they look better than they did last year. And the first three games of the tournament, well, two games of the tournament, they blew out Northwestern. It's scary how good they are. They only lost three games this year. One of them was to Creighton. That was a great game. I remember seeing the end of that game. Creighton pulled away late. But, I mean, if UConn is to not repeat as champions, it's because they beat themselves. So I'm just going to let you guys know now, UConn is in my Final Four, without a doubt. I want to touch on the Tennessee game and the Creighton game. I think that'll be the best game of the weekend. And I think that's the most interesting game because both teams are like, in a way, are so different. And I think this game could go in multiple ways. Like I feel like if Tennessee comes out early and they can establish their physicality early, and if they can get some stops early, and if they impose their will and they impose their agenda on the game and they control the pace and they make it their type of game, I think it could be a long night for Creighton. But then I also feel like if Creighton comes in and they can keep Tennessee off the offensive glass, if they can keep Tennessee from scoring the transition, and if they can somehow limit Dalton Connect, then I think it could be a long night for Tennessee. Creighton, I think, is a better offensive team. Tennessee's a better defensive team. More physical team, they're a better rebounding team, in my opinion. But if Creighton can hit a couple shots, if Creighton can make this a game where Tennessee has to score, then this can get ugly for Tennessee. Tennessee is really good, but they're really good at certain things. They have glaring flaws. Josiah Jordan James needs to have a big game. Zakai Ziegler needs to have a big game. Number 20, I don't want to botch his last name. But number 25, he's left-handed. You guys know what I'm talking about. I think it's like, I can't even try to pronounce it. Santiago Vescovi. Yeah, something like that. He needs to have a big game. He's been a shell of himself. He needs to have a big game as well. But that game, that game's on Friday. But I think out of all the games this weekend, that's going to be the most interesting one to me. Because these teams are so different. And I really feel like that game can go either way. It really could. The Duke-Houston game that Friday, which is tomorrow, I'm really excited for that game too. You know, this in a way reminds me of the Creighton-Tennessee game. I kind of get the same vibe, but Filipowski can be a huge difference maker in this game. When Houston went to Kansas and they had to see Hunter Dickinson, they struggled. Houston really struggled getting stops against Kansas. Kansas kept them off the offensive glass, just like Creighton with Tennessee. If Duke can keep Houston off the offensive glass, then it could be a long night for Houston. Excuse me, but the thing about Houston, Jamal Shedd, he will be with L.J. Crier and Emmanuel Sharp. Those two guys can defend. Those two guys get after it. They hit big shots, and they are tough to beat. That's going to be a tough game. Illinois-Iowa State game, Terrence Shannon Jr., he's a lottery watch guy. I think he could be a lottery pick. He's really good. I think he's underrated. I don't know why he doesn't get a lot of talk. In a way, just like I feel about Don't Connect, he's underrated, and he's going to make an NBA team very happy. However, this Iowa State team is gritty. They guard, they defend, and if they're probably the best defensive team in the country, if it weren't for Houston. But they're probably the best defensive team in the country in this tournament. That's going to be a very interesting game. I think Iowa State is the better team, but I think a player like Terrence Shannon Jr. can really take over this game. Just like a player like a Don't Connect or a Caleb Love or RJ Davis, of course, or a Zach Eady, a Tristan Newton. He's one of those guys that can have a huge impact on this tournament. And it could start tonight against Iowa State. I'm excited for that game. My Final Four, you know what? I'm just going to give y'all my bracket. I have the bracket right here. The way I see it going, I have UConn winning tonight. I have Illinois winning tonight. Then I have North Carolina winning, and I have Clemson beating Arizona, which will be an upset, obviously. And then on the Friday night games, I have Duke beating Houston. I have Marquette beating NC State. I have Purdue beating Gonzaga. I think that game's going to be very tight, though. Mark Few is having himself a great coaching year this year. And then I have Tennessee over Creighton. In the Elite Eight, UConn and Illinois. Jesus. That's a heavyweight battle. I have UConn and North Carolina versus Clemson. I have Carolina. Duke against Marquette. I have Marquette, who I think is being very slept on in the Sweet 16 field. And then Purdue and Tennessee, I have Tennessee winning against Purdue. In the Final Four, I have UConn over Carolina and Tennessee over Marquette. And, of course, I have UConn beating Tennessee in the championship. Now, next week when I go in here, I could sound like a complete idiot and try to defend my picks because I could be 0 for 16, all the whatever number it is. I could have not one of these picks correct. That's the beauty of March Madness. But all these games, no matter what the matchups may be, no matter who plays who, where they play, it's going to be an outstanding finish. All the people who talk about college basketball is boring now. There's no more hype around it. There's this, there's that. NIL ruined it. Stop watching. Just stop looking at it. Don't watch. It's simple. But for the basketball enjoyers, for the basketball freakazoids, the basketball lovers, this is what we want. I'm excited. I'm romantic about the game of basketball, and this is why. Nights like this is why. Tournaments like this is why. Now, as I just said, I'm romantic about the game of basketball, which is why I want to talk about an NBA now. The Western Conference is loaded. We already knew that. Denver, OKC, Minnesota, Phoenix, both LA teams, New Orleans, Dallas, Sacramento, Golden State, Houston, the list goes on and on. The thing is, though, with how loaded and how talented the West is, I still find it hard to see anyone else come out the West besides Jokic. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Imagine a Clippers-Pelicans first-round matchup. A Clippers-Mavericks first-round matchup, an OKC-Mavericks first-round matchup at 4-5. I mean, at 3-6. Imagine the Suns, Mavericks, Lakers, and Warriors in a play-in. Imagine the Suns first round. They got to play the Timberwolves. There's so many different series that would be absolutely amazing in the West. Now, with that play-in, as right now, Phoenix is a 7, Sacramento's a 8, LA at 9, LA Lakers. Lakers at 9, and then the Warriors at 10. With the Rockets looking on the outside end, they're a game back for the Warriors. Imagine that playing, and a team like the Lakers misses it. What if the Lakers miss the playoffs? What if the Warriors miss the playoffs? What if the Warriors don't even make the play-in? What if Kevin Durant and the Suns don't make the playoffs? Wouldn't that be something? That's the beauty of the West. This West is loaded. The East, I feel like, the East, I feel like, is more open than the West. Although, and I feel like I sound a little crazy for saying that, because Boston, they have a 57-15 record. They're about to eclipse 60 wins probably. So I might sound stupid, but that's the beauty of the NBA. Playoff ball is different from regular season ball. And although the Celtics are dominant, the Celtics literally are one of the best teams of the modern era, they have to show it in the playoffs. With New York as a 3 seed, Milwaukee looks better, by the way. Milwaukee has been playing much better, and Middleton is back. But with New York at that 3 seed, when Mitchell Robinson just came back, their starting center, Randall will be back soon. Of course, you still have to consider Miami. With Miami, a healthy New York, a healthy Milwaukee, a healthy Miami, I think those three teams threaten Boston. I really do. And I feel like if the cards fall in the right place, we could see Boston eliminated in the second round. I really do feel that way. Am I sitting here predicting that? No. Boston could win the championship. But at the same time, I really feel like the gap between Boston and those three teams that I just mentioned is not that wide at all. I don't think it's that wide at all. For one, those three teams have somewhat of a coaching advantage, especially with Eric Spoelstra. Two, all three of those teams can match up well with Boston, I feel like. Especially New York. With Bogdanovich, Anunoby, Randall, Hart, DiVincenzo, all those guys are versatile defenders and can shoot the ball. Randall's not that good of a shooter, but all those guys can defend and they can space the floor. Then you have Brunson, who's proven to be a playoff performer. He's not a playoff drop-off. He's a playoff performer. New York's scary. Of course, Miami. Miami has some politics issues. They have to get the play-in. They have to win the play-in, whatever, whatever, whatever. If Miami makes it, which I think they will, I think Miami, no matter what seed they are, and I'm not saying it just because they won so many playoff games last year as 8th seed. I'm just saying this because look at their team. Miami's really good. I think the Knicks, Heat, and the Bucks have just as good a chance to go to the finals like the Celtics do. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm still holding on to years past of the past Celtics teams that failed to win a championship. Maybe I'm holding on to that. Maybe I'm banking on that they just won't get the job done. Maybe I am. I really could be doing that. But I really feel like Miami, New York, and Milwaukee are right there with Boston. In the West, I don't think anybody is there with Denver. But I think certain teams, like the Suns, even though the Suns, I think they're a mess. But the Suns have dangerous potential. The Suns can ruin that West. I think the Mavs can ruin that West. And I think a healthy Clippers can ruin that West. Those three teams are the biggest threats to Denver, in my opinion. I could be wrong, though. Minnesota looks really good when they're healthy. They were dominant on defense. They're dominant on defensive end. They have two bigs. One of them can lock down the paint. One of them can space the floor. They have Anthony Edwards, who's a rising superstar. Mike Conley, who they got at the trade deadline last year, was a huge pickup, by the way. I'm glad they kept him. Mike Conley's there as another veteran point guard. That was a huge pickup last year. He's going to help them in the playoffs. And then Naz Reid and Jaden McDaniels, two versatile defenders with Anthony Edwards, who gets after on defense, just like Gobert. With those defenders and with those with Mike Conley gelled in and Gobert gelled in, the two veterans, with those young defenders they got, and Anthony Edwards as the rising star, they could be dangerous too. But I also feel like their glaring issues behind the three-point line and finding consistent offense, I think that will show in the playoffs, which might limit them. That is all I have today from Ball Talk with Bun. Hope I don't sound too bad. I'm really messed up today. I'm kind of sick. But enjoy the Final Four. Not the Final Four. Enjoy the Sweet 16 this weekend. Enjoy the Elite Eight. See you guys next week.